KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
If a constellation could be singular, it would be Jen Savage. Hey, Jen.
Oh, Mike. Hi.
That doesn't even make sense. Like, that doesn't make sense.
I like it, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to put on my business card.
You're a one-woman constellation.
Yes, exactly. That's my new job description.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're with the NEC, which stands for?
The North Coast Environmental Center.
You're also with, can you move that mic a little bit so that, there you go. Just so you're kind of in front of it.
Like this?
Don't look at me all mad. You know how microphones work? They have a front and a back.
Wait, what? No, okay. I know. It's just that I'm trying to see you over the microphone. There's so much technology in this room.
Oh, I hate technology.
At least we're in the same room for once. You're not making me sit down the hall.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we have a guest.
And yes, and it's wonderful because her name's also Jennifer. And what are the odds?
Pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty
Mike.
Good.
Yeah.
Jennifer Ekstrom, welcome to Coastal Currents.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You are now living where?
I live up in the Tahoe area.
Where in Tahoe?
Homewood.
Oh, fancy.
Is it?
It is. Well, maybe not at your house.
Glad to know it's fancy.
Homewood. That's nice. Look, Kings Beach, not fancy. Incline Village, fancy. Homewood, fancy. Squaw, fancy.
Great.
Welcome to our unfancy studios.
It's actually lovely here. Thanks for having me.
It's awesome here. And you're a former waterkeeper for Lake Ponderay in Idaho.
Exactly.
So we have a long history with Waterkeeper Alliance and Humboldt Baykeeper and all that stuff.
Yes, a long and triumphant history.
It if you look at the history of Humboldt Baykeeper, it is riddled with triumph.
Yes, and we'll talk about that at the very end, too. Don't let me forget.
Okay, but seriously, Jen.
Oncoming triumph. Okay, sorry.
Okay. Jen, why is Jennifer Ekstrom here?
Because she directed this movie that we're showing for Ocean Night, which is this coming Thursday at the Arcata Theater Lounge, and it's called Last Rush for the Wild West. And the really confusing thing is that the action in the film takes place primarily in Utah, and yet we're showing it for Ocean Night.
But why?
Well, because a lot of these issues in this film, first of all, it's a really great film, let me just say that. Second of all, Pete Nichols, Waterkeeper's national director, Arcata residence.
Who we made.
Yes.
He ignores his roots here. He pretends like we didn't make him into the star that he was.
He basically owes his entire career to K-Hum.
Exclusively to K-Hum.
Yes.
And do I get royalties? No. Not at all.
Not fair. Not fair. Well, you can complain to him at Ocean Night.
I can't. He doesn't take my calls anymore.
Well, he introduced us via email. And so when the national director of Waterkeeper says, hey, you should show this movie.
You kind of have to.
You say, Pete, really?
Yeah.
No, then you say, just kidding. You say, yes, of course. This sounds amazing. And so, and third, you know, it's really important to focus from time to time on the fact that issues all over the world ultimately affect the ocean. No matter how far away from the ocean you are, it's still 70% of the earth. And it all has consequences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Jennifer Ekstrom, you come from a communications. You said you majored in communication, or you minored in communications?
In television production, yes.
Okay. What was your major?
Public communications.
All right.
Mass communications.
We're about to get communicated.
Well, I suddenly feel really insecure.
As do I.
I thought we were communications professionals, but no. I didn't really think that.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Oh, I'd say you are. From what I've heard, definitely communications
we're gonna
professionals
get shown up
here.
Big time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So the movie, which again is going to be shown at Ocean Night Thursday at the Arcata Theater, Last Rush for the Wild West. You're working as a waterkeeper in Idaho, and then suddenly this news comes across your screen, and the news was what?
Well, the news is that there is a proposal in the headwaters of the Colorado River to begin strip mining for tar sands and oil shale. And there's almost 1 million acres that are opened up by the Bureau of Land Management in the headwaters of the Colorado River. And the impacts of this scale of mining, what people need to know is that this is on par to be one of the most destructive and polluting industrial areas on the planet today. It's not just another little mining proposal. It has the potential to impact, in terms of water quality and water quantity, to impact 36 million people who live downstream in California, in Arizona, in Nevada, in southern Utah, and in Mexico. And not only does the water quality and water quantity have potential to be undermined, but also this project would exacerbate global warming in ways that we cannot yet accurately predict.
Yeah. In fact, I think we can save ourselves a lot of time in this interview just by saying, maybe let's not pursue more carbon production. Like, maybe let's just stop with that and start hunting down alternatives as fast as we can.
That's a great idea. But then I'd also just like to add that this is not just your run-of-the-mill carbon production. This is the dirtiest type of carbon petroleum fuel on the planet. It is so rich in carbon and it's so dirty that it actually cannot even be refined to be the fuel that we put in our cars to take our kids to school and get to work and that kind of thing. It turns into diesel is about as clean as they can make this fuel.
So you're against it, is what I hear you saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Not for it.
That's accurate.
So
go ahead.
One of the things that surprised me, which I think a lot of people have the same reaction, is... Oh, sorry, Mike. Okay. One of the things that startled me is that it feels like such a huge step backwards. Like, I thought we were not doing stuff like this anymore. If I'd heard about it happening in some other country, maybe I would be like, oh, yeah.
We're China in the 70s.
We're exporting our energy problems. But to hear this is happening, like, right in the heart of America, where I feel like there's been a huge legacy of environmental disasters around mining and drilling and all this stuff. And it's like, now we're going to do the worst one ever? Like, why? Jen.
It's confounding. If I knew the answer why, then maybe it would be easier to stop it. But the interesting thing that I'm glad that you brought up China, because the interesting thing is that it's actually a foreign corporation that's proposing the project. It's the foreign corporation that will gain financially from doing this project. The American citizens will be left with the impacts in terms of pollution and health problems. And the final product is essentially destined for the world market, and we expect it'll be primarily consumed by China.
Okay, so walk us through the process. Again, we're talking with Jennifer Ekstrom. Her documentary will be shown at Ocean Night, Last Rush for the Wild West, Tar Sands, Oil, Shale, and the American Frontier. What do they want to do? Like, what's the mechanical process that they're looking at, and why does it cause such alarm for people who live along the Colorado River and in its watershed?
What they would like to do is pulverize about 150 feet of the topsoil and surface rock in an area that's situated nicely between several different national monuments and national parks, national protected areas that all Americans go to for recreation and enjoyment. And so they want to pulverize that rock. And what they call reclamation is actually just spreading out the rock after they extract the petroleum product and maybe sprinkle a little bit of topsoil back over it. So the first storm that comes through, it's going to wash the topsoil away or blow it away in the wind. And then we have potentially 1 million acres of pulverized rock that has residual hydrocarbons and residual solvents in it. The rain will then filter those pollutants down into the groundwater and into the surface water of the Green River, the White River, both of which are tributaries to the Colorado River, which serves, you know, 36 million people for drinking, for irrigation, for growing our food, and all of those things downstream.
So, again, we're not talking about fracking per se, but you are talking about oil that is embedded in the rock in a fundamental way. Not like pockets of oil, but actually, like, if you took all the components of, if you reached in there and you grabbed one rock in your hand, a physical rock, like, in there are tiny, tiny pieces of oil that can be removed with enough smashing and enough chemicals.
Smashing chemicals and hot water, yes.
Smashing chemicals and hot water, okay.
Yes, and if you actually hold that rock in your hand and rub your fingers across it, your hand will be very oily. It's definitely an oil-rich rock substance.
Okay, so we've got foreign investors, we've got an environmental, we've got a heavy-duty environmental impact of this, 150 feet of bedrock getting shattered. You've got it between sensitive environments of national imports that are importance that are recognized as such. I don't see a problem. How could that possibly go wrong?
Well, that was a great summary, and I think I'll let the listeners decide for themselves. Actually, they should come down to Ocean Night and see the whole film and learn about the additional array of concerns associated with this project.
What don't we know about this? I mean, we continually learn more about our actions on the planet, you know, with earthquake clusters and areas of the country that never had it. What are some concerns that are not yet founded?
Well, one thing that I'm really concerned about is the way that the state of Utah approved these initial proposals without really any concern for monitoring in the future. They did not require these corporations to do any sort of groundwater assessment before they start.
You were lying to my face.
No, I'm serious.
No.
You can watch the hearing.
I'm recording you. I can play this back and prove that you're lying to me. Are you serious?
You can come and watch the film and watch the hearing where this all unfolds in the state of Utah. But it gets better. Give me a chance here.
Define better.
Okay. So they're actually not requiring any sort of monitoring of nearby wells after the fact. Oh my gosh, he's full of fun.
Hold on. You can't... Jen?
You can't.
I'm leaving.
No.
I'm seriously leaving. Jen, this is all you.
They aren't requiring any sort of liners or any sort of protection.
But how can they not do that? We have all these... rules and regulations. And...
Well, we have federal rules and regulations which do a great deal to protect.
NEPA?
Because that is why this company is strategically starting on state land in Utah rather than the Bureau of Land Management lands, because they can avoid any sort of federal environmental regulation, assessment, reviews, all of that. They're avoiding it. And so once they get this first project going in Utah with only the state of Utah required to approve it, then they'll know how to work the system. They'll know how to do it. It won't be new technology anymore. They won't be testing untested technology anymore. Then they'll be able to go to the federal government and say, hey, we've done this. It's awesome. Let's approve it on the federal level.
And having that precedent is so useful for them and so bad for us.
Exactly.
So what about the people who live there? Are they just welcoming this with open arms?
No, there are a number of ranchers who, you know, have cows out in that landscape. It's a very, very remote landscape in eastern Utah where it's initially beginning. But there are a number of people out there who are very concerned, mm-hmm. but they essentially don't have any rights to stop it because it's not on their land. It's on actually school trust lands in Utah, which is further ironic. Deep inside irony.
Oh my god, it's like a bad dream. I mean a real one. That's true. That makes it a nightmare come true.
If you look at the list of all the things, it's like you're like, no, that can't happen. No, like every single one, it's like, no, they can't, but you can't do that. No, you can't do that. But apparently you can do these things if you play the game right.
I see now, Jennifer Ekstrom, why this would get a person's attention. Like why you would go, yeah, you know what? I'm going to quit my job and make a movie about this because that is a story.
Well, and you could compare it. I mean, I think about like, look at all the state land around here. Look at our remote area. I mean, if California was not a state that had leading environmental standards, then that kind of thing can happen here. But it's a very common situation where you have a big corporation go into a remote rural area because there isn't the people power to fight them often.
That is nuts. Okay, so the movie is being shown on Thursday. Doors at 6?
Doors at 6:30. Movie starts at 7.
Okay, what else is on tap for Ocean Night?
And Jen's going to do a question and answer afterwards, so people can actually ask questions, and she will answer them, as a question and answer session often does.
Do you like your movie? This is completely outside of the topic that we've been talking about, but like when you go back and you watch your final, like after you lock the edit and you put the music in and you turn it in, like, now that you watch it, are you like, I'd have done that differently or anything? Or are you completely satisfied with it?
I like the movie. I think the movie tells the story that I needed to tell, and I'm really happy about that. I think always with any piece of art, you're going to go back and say, oh, I want to do a new edit. Oh, I want to change this just a little bit. But that may come in time. But yeah, I like the movie. I'm satisfied with the movie, and I'm really glad to be helping to tell this really important story.
So what are you doing outside of telling this story? Or are there other people already fighting this in courts and so forth?
Well, thankfully, the Colorado Riverkeeper has been holding this proposal at bay for a number of years. I'm absolutely convinced that it would be going full steam today if it were not for the Colorado Riverkeeper. As far as the future goes, the Waterkeeper Alliance, the Colorado Riverkeeper, and other organizations have now teamed up, and they are starting the Colorado River Connected campaign. And the idea is to take this message on the road downstream in the Colorado River watershed to engage and inform the people who are going to be most impacted by this type of activity.
And that's a huge point, too, that it's not limited to just the people who live right around where the project is.
Right.
I mean, it extends so far.
Hold on. What you're saying is, like, we're all connected. Is that what you're alleging?
Sometimes.
There's a web of life that sort of...
Sometimes the butterfly's wings flap somewhere. Yeah.
That's, by the way, debunked, the butterfly wing thing.
Can I still use it as a metaphor?
Sure,
does it have to be literal?
It's not metaphorically debunked yet, but scientifically, yes.
How's climate change? Is that debunked yet? I think that the climate impacts of this sort of project will absolutely affect everyone.
Yeah. I mean,
we're all connected. We're all one.
Yeah. Like, we need to stop pouring gas on that fire.
Please.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just let's summarize this, Jennifer Ekstrom. Let me make sure. And again, I'm kind of a dummy. But you made a movie. It'll show tomorrow night, Ocean Night. You'll take Q&A after that. The movie, the contents... hysterically awful. Okay, so you want to smash 150 feet of bedrock, pour chemicals over that to extract pretty much the dirtiest fuel that you can find on a level that is on par with supposedly the world's most notorious environmental industrial waste situations. And then this is between national parks and the headwaters of one of America's favorite rivers, and it is also the river that feeds drinking water to like 30 million people and farms. And the company that's doing that is not an American company, and it will go to the world market, and then there are very minimal soil and water testing requirements both before and after. That's basically it.
I wish I would have interviewed you for the film. Wow, that was a great summary.
I feel like I want to stab myself. Like, that is the craziest thing. Oh. I've heard crazy things all week. You wouldn't believe, like, the last 24 hours. It's been crazy. That takes the cake.
Don't stab yourself. Just keep helping get the word out. Thank you for doing this interview and educating your listeners about this really important issue. We need you.
I want to hit the bell for you, Mike.
I'm putting the pen down.
Where's that bell?
Can you hit the bell on our behalf there?
Over there. Do it. All right, well, this has been eye-opening and stab-inducing. So tomorrow night, good times, 6:30.
Please come out and see the movie. You won't want to kill yourself after.
There's actually hope. One of the greatest things that I can say about this proposal is that it hasn't happened yet. There's a 300-acre test pit out there, but they have not started commercial production. They think they're going to start this year in 2015, but it hasn't happened. So we have a unique opportunity to stop it before it starts.
And with that, I'm going to do something unprecedented in the 15-year history of the show. I'm going to ban the use of two words. Test pit. I don't ever want to hear those words in here ever again. I don't like thinking about it, and I'm going to annul the fact that you said that. Jennifer Ekstrom, it's been fun. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
We will post, do we have permission to post a trailer to our website?
Please.
Okay, we will do that. Jen, anything else?
Yes, Humble Baykeeper.
Who are they?
Humble Baykeeper, the Humble Bay stewards with the mostest. As you may remember, in December, Coast Seafoods, our wonderful oyster growers, partnered up because everybody, oyster farmers and general people and Humble Baykeeper, all care about clean water in the bay, right? People care about clean water in the bay. So this great new partnership, Coast Seafood said, we will match up to $10,000 in donations during the month of December. And guess how much Humble Baykeeper raised?
Let me see. $1,000.
Nope.
Higher?
More.
$10,000?
A little more.
What?
Yeah, $14,000.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Good for Baykeeper.
Which turns into $24,000 magically. Yay!
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, that makes me happy.
And you know what that means? It means that we can start finding out where all that E. coli comes from. Yeah.
If you trace it back to my dog, I swear to God, that's too specific. That is a good
We won't name names. But yeah, so that's a great news for Humboldt Bay and people who care about clean water.
Oh, I love mariculture people.
Yeah.
They're the best.
Yeah, I'm going to go eat some oysters right now to celebrate.
Aw. Well, filter feeders. I actually don't eat oysters. But I love what they do, and that's super important industry.
Yes.
All right. Well, so we have learned something unbelievable, which I refuse to believe. We have banned two words. We have plugged an event. I'm gonna say that we're done here.
All right.
You guys very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Let's get these pens off the table. All right. It's KHUM. That has been Coastal Currents. Back in a moment.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.